Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. This podcast is brought to you by our wonderful partners, Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, and Jen and Carrie. Stay tuned to hear more about these amazing companies that I am partnered with and check out our show notes for discounts and deals. But for now, let's get right to the conversation. Hey fans, Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez here, your host of the podcast. I'm here today with Danielle Snyder, licensed clinical social worker, wellness and running coach. She is an avid ultra marathoner who is constantly reminded of the importance of mental training in addition to physical training. She has run countless 100-mile races, including most recently winning Orcas 100-mile in October. She set the FKT on the Oregon section of the Pacific Crest Trail and the Rogue River Trail. Danielle specializes in helping athletes avoid the pitfalls or negative self-talk so that they can achieve more balance in all parts of their lives. Danielle's passion is to guide her clients along their paths to physical and mental well-being, helping athletes reach their potential. So in today's episode with Danielle, I think we're going to talk some specifics about her as an athlete, as an ultra marathoner, and then her work as well as a therapist and how she, you know, kind of does mental training for the athletes that she works with and kind of everything that her business entails. So Danielle, thanks for joining.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
So as I do work with all athletes and multiple sports, and we have listeners, you know, who are maybe into soccer. And so As I read off your bio and we're saying 100 miler and an FKT, there's like in the trail running and ultra running, like there's the running community and then there's like the ultra running community. Even that's a separate thing.
Yeah.
But I first kind of wanted to start with your journey as an athlete, first and foremost.
Sure.
And when did you get to this place of becoming an ultra runner?
Yeah, it's funny. As you were saying it, I was like, oh, I should share that, like, I set the FKT on the Pacific Crest Trail, the Oregon section, but I no longer hold it, and like wanting to like send all these details. But then I'm like, oh, like no one even knows what an FKT is. And we live in these.
Yeah, rooms. That was one of my questions for you was going to be, can you tell others what an FKT is? Because that's a very specific trail ultra, not even all runners know what that is.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's just it's kind of fascinating because you care so deeply about your sport. And then you recognize when you're talking to other people, like this is such a small sect of the world. Like no one knows what you're doing at all. So,
which is like good and bad. It's a little humbling, kind of puts you in your place. Yes. But then it's like also like, wait a second.
I appreciate it.
What you've done is impressive and people do care. And, you know, but yeah, there's a lot. It is like the small thing, the small category.
It is. It really is. And I think as a runner, I find that really helpful because you're always ebbing and flowing with progress. And sometimes we envision that there are people who are very invested. And while I think like people who love me are invested, at the same time, like no one really cares. Like, you know, like everyone's like, well, we want you to be happy and healthy and all those things. But outside of that, like, whatever, like it doesn't really matter to us. So,
and we're saying this with a smile, our listeners know, like you've got a huge smile on your face like this. And I think this is why you're good at what you do as a mindset coach as well, is like, you can take that, you can be passionate about something and care,
sure,
but also like take a step back and know like maybe this isn't the most important thing in life.
That the lessons that we're learning from the journey are really important. And it's not to say that I don't care so deeply. I mean, I can spend like 15 to 20 hours or 25 hours a week training. Like, I clearly care a ton about this sport and it's very important to me.
Yeah.
But I also can reflect on, like, you know, when I first started running when I was 13, I've been running for a really long time. It was my only identity, and it overcame me if things didn't turn out the way I needed them to be. And as I grew and I developed this different type of relationship with running, I was able to reflect on, and that's not, I'll finish my thought, but I was able to reflect on the importance of putting it into perspective for myself, where it's okay to be sad when things don't happen or you try really hard and you have a bad race, but it's also okay to set a time limit on how long you're going to be sad and then, you know, fall, get up, brush off your face and like keep moving forward. So yeah, I say that with understanding of this is my life. Like, I've dedicated my life to it. So it is all very important. But I digress from the question. I started running when I was...
What was the question?
How I started running, I think. Yeah, I know.
Yes, yes. Tell us. So you started at 13. To me a lot.
Yeah. I started running when I was 13 with my mom. And at some point... So my mom, she has a neurological condition called dystonia. And Kara Goucher recently was diagnosed with it. So...
Yes.
It's the same diagnosis that she has, but it was a long time ago. And it's kind of the type that she has is through repetitive motion. So it's focal dystonia, which can happen sometimes to runners who do repetitive motions. So there was a long journey of getting her diagnosed. And during that, we thought she was misdiagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease. And I started to heavily rely on running as a sole tool to deal with loss. And I think with a lot of us athletes, it very quickly became uneven, where I wasn't fueling enough. I was running a lot. I got sick with an eating disorder. I lost a lot of weight and I had to go to inpatient treatment. And after treatment, And this is different for everyone who goes through treatment. They recommended I look at my relationship with running and I take a year off of running. So I took a year off of running. I was like 23 or 4. I don't really remember. But they were at a point where, like, this is very detrimental to your health. Like, I had something happening with my colon where the blood going to... like to my lower organs were going to my heart. And so I wasn't processing food in a right way. So things got very serious quickly. And I decided with the support of a team that I needed to step away from running. So when I decided to come back to running with support from another team, it was really important to me to do it differently. And I stopped actually running roads. With a caveat, I don't think road running is what caused my eating disorder. Like, sometimes when I'm saying this, I think people are like, okay, so if I become a trail runner, I'll be like completely resolved in my eating challenges. And I'm like, no, not necessarily. No.
It's just part of your story. It's just part of your journey. Yeah.
This is my journey. And I slowly created a different type of relationship where fuel was not only necessary to help me achieve my goals, it could be fun, which is kind of crazy because I'm thinking of 18-year-old Danielle saying like fuel could be fun. And that just doesn't, you know, like that feels insane, even though I've been in recovery for 10 plus years. So I was able to align more with my values and sense of adventure by being a trail runner. And I still work with a therapist and work with a coach to make sure that I am making good decisions for my body while knowing that I'm also doing a sport that is intense and pushes my limits. So, been interesting.
So many things. Yeah, we keep going, but I want to touch on stepping away from sport, that was the right thing for your health at that time. And for anybody going through that right now or trying to make that decision of stepping away, like, hopefully you can be an inspiration that saying I need to step away right now doesn't mean I step away forever. Although it might, if that's the right decision for you, but you can come back better, stronger, and continue to have a career. Or, you know, it's like, why are we stepping away? It's not, it's to make things better.
Sure.
And so I know making that decision, I'm sure it was really hard, but you know, it's always something that in hindsight right now, you're like, well, that was the best thing because it restored my health. And then I was able to kind of start fresh physically and mentally.
Yeah.
And I think that change from road running to trail running, again, it's not to say trail is better or anything, but what it was this new outlook, fresh start for you. And, you know, maybe for other people that's saying, you know, stepping away from competitive volleyball and instead picking up running, or it's stepping away from running and leaning into yoga. Like there's maybe just other ways of moving your body, training or exercise that bring you joy.
Sure.
And I think maybe that's what that transition was for you, is like trail suddenly, it was a fun, more joyful way for you to train, as well as the fueling part became more fun.
Yeah. And I don't ever like to give the impression that this means my eating disorder no longer exists, because I do think that we as a society create a narrative that you recover and then you're in recovery and then you're better and then you don't have to deal with it. And while that could be true for a lot of people, I know based on my genetics, my upbringing, all of the things that my trauma that I've gone through, that will always be a what I like to call my Achilles heel, where I have to be aware of challenging that part of my brain so I can do the things I love and still remain healthy. And it looks different for everyone, but that's really important for me to say, because when I first got into recovery, I envisioned recovery being something different. Like where I would have no challenges ever again. Like I would hit this place and it would be like, okay, food is no longer an issue for you. While I still do everything I need to do and I prioritize it, there are days where it's harder and there are days where it's easy.
Yeah. And totally fair for you to say and to share that with others who are also experiencing that, to like normalize that. And I think you never know what you're, you know, you have to just start the process, right? And figure it out.
Sure. Yeah. It's different for everyone.
But I also think it's fair to say that, like, and this like is kind of cliche. Maybe you've heard people say before, it's like, well, an issue maybe with in the eating disorder, as opposed to some other like an alcohol dependence disorder, is like, well, you can survive without alcohol, but like you can't survive without food. So it is something that you do have to eat every single day of your life. You're going to be confronted with the decision of what's for lunch today.
Yes.
Food is something that we can't ever truly ignore. And so there is always going to be a level of like thought and intention to it, attention to it as well. And so that's where I think a lot of that, like, it's never, like the eating piece will never go away. And then you have added to that, you're an ultra runner. You really have to think about your food in order to sustain your body. And so that just the fact of thinking about it is where I think people with a history of an eating disorder, it's like, well, this is something that will always be on my mind to challenge myself. Do I need more? Should I add this in? Is it time to eat now? You know, like those things that you really have to challenge yourself with, they're going to pop up a lot.
Yeah. And it changes. So like for me, some months, it's not a challenge. It's just very easy.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is a challenge.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important part of my story, because running to me has always been fragile, like, and fraught with inconsistency in terms of like, I don't know it will always be there. And I, you know, I think my job also lends me to that perspective of, I work with athletes who are injured. I worked with people who get diagnosed with chronic health conditions. And so being healthy as a human is important to me, and knowing that I'm going to always be adventurous. I joke and say, if someday I can't run, I'm going to canoe all the Great Lakes. Like, I'm like,
I love that.
Yeah. I've already like planned the worst case scenario because that's my brain. I'm like, yeah, I got this. But it's not this perfect journey. It's come with a lot of choices and intentionality.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think this goes back to something you said in the beginning of, you know, you started running at a young age and then what your mother was going through with her diagnosis, like you used running as a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And to deal with loss, and which is okay. Lots of us do that. I do that sometimes. And out of all the coping mechanisms, maybe it's generally an okay one, you know, to get outside and move your body. But it can't, I think there's like a limit, right? As to how much is healthy coping. And because for you, as your story is like, it became unhealthy. This wasn't, it suddenly wasn't the best way to cope anymore when it was hurting you in return.
Yeah.
So kind of going to what you were saying of like, running can be used on some level for coping and for mental health, but we need to find other ways as well. I think that's kind of where we were going with this conversation.
Yeah, there was like a lot.
Because running can be taken away. Injuries, diagnoses.
Yeah. And not that life. I think people should act out of fear because, you know, I do see sometimes that popping up from people of like, we don't know. So we have to do everything we can to like kind of push it all in. And it's like, well, it's not necessarily it either, because if you do that, then you make yourself more prone to certain things. So it's like always, you know, I guess I'm obsessed with this writer and social worker, Brené Brown.
Yeah.
And she talks about like rumbling with like your story. And I'm like always rumbling with, okay, why am I doing this? How is this serving me? What are my intentions behind it? And then I'm making mistakes. And then I'm coming back and being like, okay, what am I going to do differently this time? And then I make another mistake, you know? And so it's like such a process of growing. And I like to share about all of it, because I think unintentionally, I think we share pieces. And I think as a society, we like beautiful, pretty outcomes. And for me, my reality is it's messy. Like I recently, a couple of months ago, injured myself and struggled without running, and then was frustrated that I was struggling because I wanted to be above it, because like I'm not in that place anymore. And then I got healthy and I was like, I'm good. And then I got re-injured. And then I was like, damn. And so I think normalizing that it's a part of our work as humans that we just kind of ebb and flow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Fans, I hope you are enjoying the conversation. We are going to take a quick pause so I can tell you about our partners. They are so valuable in providing you with amazing products and helping keep this podcast going. First, Prevenix. Thanks to their incredible Joint Health Plus product, my aches and pains from running, and honestly, being a new mom, as crazy as that sounds, have literally disappeared. As I continue to push my body physically as an athlete, and frankly, as I continue to age, I was shocked at the aches I was beginning to feel in my knees, wrists, ankles. It seemed like omega-3s, curcumin, nothing was really working. But after just 1 month of Joint Health Plus from Prevenix, I felt a drastic improvement. Honestly, this is something I rarely experience with supplements, but Prevenix uses quality ingredients backed by sound science. Their products are pharmaceutical grade with extensive testing for safety, quality, and purity. They offer other supplements, including probiotics, omega, immune health, and a multivitamin, which I also use daily. And the science behind their multi has changed my opinion on multivitamins altogether. I used to never recommend them or take them myself, and now I recommend and take Prevenix Multivitamin Mineral and Antioxidant Plus daily. I am so impressed with Prevenix, and I can't wait for you to try. You can get 15% off your first order using the code RISEUP at checkout. The company also offers 100% money-back guarantee within 30 days because they stand by their products, and so do I. Head to Prevenix.com, Prevenix.com, and use the code RISEUP, one word, at checkout for 15% off. Health, wellness, and fitness coaches, listen up. Practice Better is the all-in-one platform that I use to manage my business and my clients. From client scheduling and messaging, hosting sessions, taking notes, creating modules, invoicing, telehealth, building reports, and more, Practice Better is the better way to manage your practice as a nutrition or health or fitness coach. Look no further. Use the link in our show notes and use the code RISEUP20 for 20% off your first 4 months plus a 14-day free trial. I've been using Practice Better since the inception of my business, Rise Up Nutrition, and I couldn't be happier. Again, the code is RISEUP20, all caps. Use the link in our show notes for 20% off your first 4 months and a 14-day free trial. And last, ladies, moms, every mom is an athlete. That's why Jen and Carrie have designed the best nursing and pumping sports bras. I cannot rave about these enough. I hate that most maternity bras have clips and don't support being active, but Jen and Carrie get that because they're moms and athletes themselves. They want you to be a mom and an athlete. So their stylish and athletic high-impact bras allow you to crush your workout and then feed your baby with comfort and style. They have saved me during this time of my life, keeping up with sport and momming. Please go check them out at jenandcarrie.com and use the code RISEUP10 for $10 off your order. You won't regret it. Again, jenandcarrie.com, RISEUP, all caps, RISEUP10 for $10 off. Let's get back to the episode.
Well, I think too, especially when we're talking mindset, mental health, mental resiliency, like I'm just kind of like word vomiting, as people say.
I just did that to you.
Okay. Like with physical training, you can follow this 12-week training plan and really like see progress. And we know progress isn't always linear. We have right. our like we were off one day, whatever, but like over 12 weeks, like if everything's going well, like you should see that, oh, I did get faster or stronger.
Right.
I think with the mindset and mental training, though, it really, like, you never know what life is going to throw at you.
Sure.
So you can have this plan to, I'm going to, you know, start journaling and find more coping techniques and start this self-love journey. But, like, trauma gets thrown in there at week 6. And it's like, well, thank goodness you started
right.
this journey, because otherwise, but it's like, you're not going to just 12 weeks later be like, I'm just this happy person now who knows how to cope with life. It's like life is always throwing different things at you.
Yeah.
So it really is just like continuing to learn and adapt and have more resources. But I don't know that mental training ever truly gets like easier.
I mean, that is a hope when people come to me
yeah.
and like an ideology. And it's always one of the hardest conversations that I have where it's like, oh, the work never actually stops. Like,
I know, it's kind of like, what?
I'm like, I'm sorry, I know I'm the bearer of bad news, and you grow, but it's kind of like running hills. Like mm-hmm. you get stronger, you mentally figure it out, you maybe even learn how to push yourself to a different level, but it's still
hard. A hill is still a hill.
Yeah, like you're running up hard. Something like you're it's you know. And I think that's yeah. a common theme I hear from my athletes a lot, like running, like, that was so hard. And I'm like, yeah, it's hard. Like,
yeah.
It's all no, hard.
I love that. I love that one. And this is also why I love running, because there's so many like life metaphors.
Sure, yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Like so many. It just like it's running and life metaphors are just match up perfectly. But yeah, I think that our mindset and mental health very much is like running hills. You can get faster at them. Maybe it doesn't feel so steep one time, but like it's still a hill and it's still hard.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's backtrack a little bit more again with your journey with running. Again, I want to go back to how we started this conversation of, can you just explain to listeners what the heck an FKT is?
Sure. An FKT is the fastest known time. So I don't even remember when they started, but this like group, these two dudes started Fastest Known Time, and it's a website and you can take a look at it. And they have certain requirements for routes. So you can, it's like essentially having a race, but without anyone else being there, you just have to track it and right. follow the rules put in place on the website. And I think it was popular before the pandemic, but then after the pandemic or during the pandemic, when races no longer were being held, it became mm-hmm. even more popular because it was a way to be competitive and push yourself without that race format.
Yeah. And it's definitely too, again, in the trail and long distance, very long distance community, it's like, for example, your Pacific Crest Trail.
Yeah.
That was like 9 days.
Yeah. So that was, they don't have to be this long.
No. Yeah. That was a very long one. No, very long. But just saying, like, that's why it's like, okay, it's not a race in the sense that we've got a bib and a chip time, because it's just, that's not how going out on the Pacific Crest Trail works. But
right.
Hey, I did this here. Like, this is what my watch said. I'll upload it to the website. And so far, this is the fastest known time, sure. You know? And
yeah,
it kind of reminds me of like rock climbing, you know, people will go out and just do a solo route. And it's like, then when they get to the top, it's like they take a picture and that's their proof, yeah. Right? That's their proof is here I am at the top and here's my watch. And maybe I only told one other person that I'm doing this, but like,
yeah,
it happened, right?
I think that's what originally attracted me to FKTs, was that it was a little bit more anonymous back then. And it was something that women were not as involved in. And it was also something that, like, at the time felt really, I mean, still when I'm thinking about it, I'm like, that's really crazy. But, you know, it was like a different type of adventure, but it also tied in pushing yourself. And so me and one of my best friends, her name is Jamison Clover, planned this project for about a year, which I'm not a great planner. So I give like her a lot of credit for helping plan it with me, because I really had to learn some skills. I'm mm-hmm. very much a show up and let's get this done type of person. And there were so many things, because up until that point, like, I had not done a lot of multi-day adventures. I had done 100 milers before and lots of long days in the trails, but it wasn't something that I was necessarily curious about until that project popped up. And I mean, just the logistics alone of like knowing. So we had people meet us. So ours was a supported. So essentially we would have different areas on the trail where our support crew would meet us and where we would sleep. Some people do it without crew and they carry everything on their back.
Yeah.
Or some people do it where they like drop off certain materials for themselves so they can get to it on their own. And
yeah.
So there are different types. We chose to have support. And, you know, it's interesting because one of the reasons why we were so invested is that a couple different male groups had gone and done this route before, and there had been no female attempts at running. Mm-hmm. Tons of women have hiked the Oregon section of the PCT.
Yeah.
And we talked to them, and I remember on the second day, I was like, why didn't they tell us this was going to be so hard? Like, they didn't tell me about this pain that I'm feeling on the second day.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was just, you know, incredible, because you believe you have a certain capacity, a physical capacity, and then your body can overcome barriers that your brain tells you are in place. So mm-hmm. after the second day, we had gone more than 100 miles, and that was like the most I had ever run in two consecutive days. And I was like,
wow,
but I'm still running. Like my body, like
yeah.
every morning I'd wake up and I'd be like, I'm really tired. This really hurts. And then I'd run.
Crazy.
Yeah. It was so insane. And
yeah.
Yeah. Jamison ended up getting hurt, I think on the third or fourth day. And that never crossed my mind that she would get hurt. Like, she's so tough. And I didn't think I would get hurt, but I just never envisioned like having to continue on without her.
Yeah.
So I had to. And within the first mile, let me just brief caveat, like the PCT on the Oregon section is not hard to follow. It is pretty straightforward. It's pretty difficult to get lost. But I started like the section without her at like 4 a.m. and it was dark and I got lost in the first mile. And I just sat on the trail and cried and was like, I don't know if I can do this. But my crew had already left. So I was like, all right, I guess I just have to do this. And mm-hmm. this has prompted a lot of my work with athletes is these experiences I've had where my brain is telling me I can't do something and my body maybe is telling me you're physically okay, but we don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And kind of like finding that balance of stretching my physical and emotional comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think the coolest thing, one of the really cool things about the FKT is that I have proceeded to be able to give back to the community. And a woman messaged me like a year after my FKT or half a year after and was like, hey, I want to go and get that. Mm-hmm. And we are really, really close friends now. And I was able to go and support her.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was so cool because I'm a firm believer in competition can raise us all in our sport. So the faster women go, the more the sport gets elevated. And so.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So it was cool to kind of see it and help her. She actually beat the men's time. And so it was, yeah, super speedy. So being able to kind of come full circle and.
Well, it's also like you and Jameson, you know, started that, like opened up, like it just maybe people just weren't even thinking about other women. I mean, just weren't even thinking about doing that. And then it's like, wait, these two did it. And then it leads other people to say, I want to do that too. And so it's really, yeah, it's like, okay, so what, that you're not the fastest known time anymore. The point is like, one, you did it. That's a huge accomplishment for yourself. And then you empowered other women to do it too, which is so amazing.
Yeah. I feel really honored to have that experience. And it's something that it happened a couple of years ago. So it's not something I talk about a lot anymore.
Yeah.
However, it does feel like the roots for how I have kind of started to journey and move forward with running and pushing my body as well as pushing my mind and finding a level of compassion within these bounds. Because one of the things that I try to bring to the ultra community is that you can be accountable, work really hard, and still be compassionate and understanding with your body. Mm-hmm. And it often feels like an oxymoron of like, how do you work with your body when you're asking your body to do so much?
Mm-hmm. How do you be compassionate, but also push yourself to the limits?
Yeah.
And it's like that experience for you was, I mean, first of all, 9 days, that many hours on a trail, what you went through physically and mentally is like, I'm sure that was a turning point in some ways of just so many life lessons, learning lessons in your own journey with running, with life, and then in your work of being, you know, a therapist to others as well. It's like that. Yeah, this was a few years ago, but that was like a huge deal.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like, I mean, I'm saying really, that not like to brag, but like sometimes I'm like, did that happen? Like I ask people, I'm like, was I really there? Like, that's. I mean, and I feel that
really happened.
One of the things that I appreciate about myself is that and maybe this is like a lack of confidence, I don't know, but I'm always impressed by like when I'm able to do something that I'm like, wow, like how the heck did I do that? I mean, I celebrate all the time. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a really far way.
But no, I actually think what this is truly a testament to, again, like your work in the space of mental health and stuff is a practice of showing appreciation to yourself.
Yeah.
That's what I see it as, is like taking a moment to be impressed with yourself, I think is like a practice that can help people actually have more confidence. It's not because of a lack of confidence that we're like, what, did I do that? It's actually exactly what gives you confidence is that practice of pausing for a minute and reflecting on like, damn, look at everything that I just did. That's so awesome, right? Like a daily gratitude practice, a daily appreciation practice. Like we can appreciate the sun every day, or we can appreciate ourselves and imagine what that would do. Yeah, or both.
Yeah, right?
Both is even better.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really important reminder of perspective, because so quickly after you do finish something, and I experience this too, I go from being really proud to being like, oh, I could have done better.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people resonate with that.
Yeah. And so I think it's important to know that those feelings are going to come up no matter what. And then you can challenge them. And again, it's like such a metaphor for life of how we can learn to work with our brains and our bodies instead of against them, which I know I do this a lot. But as a society, I think we're really taught to fight a lot what our bodies naturally, you know, like, for instance, weight. I often, for a long time, I fought my natural weight. I would fight my natural sleep patterns because I need like 10 hours of sleep, which I have like, ooh, I love my 10 hours of sleep. But, you know, and because we're like informed that this is the right way to live and, or this is the right way to look. And, you know, one of the things ultra running has helped me do is like, what's right is what your body needs. And that's okay. It may look different than the next person, but at the end of the day, learning how to listen to your specific needs is what's going to help you be the best athlete for yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I think too, I want to, as we're talking about like kind of all these lessons, I want to shift to talk about, you know, your work and how you help others. But just to quickly stay on the topic of being an ultra runner and whether it be the 9-day Pacific Crest Trail, which was obviously a very long ultra running experience for you, but just the fueling that goes behind it. Like, because what I see, again, I know it was many years ago, but it's like, okay, ultra runners, we know, you know, you have these aid stations and it's, you know, you should be consuming food. Lots of it is liquid calories or the gels, or it's, hey, I'm stopping at an aid station eating a burrito.
Yeah.
You know, like really, you know, and here's a slice of pizza and here's, you know, because you just, as opposed to the road running where we might just focus on carbs, like, no, I'm going all day. You need everything and you need a lot of it. But then a lot of your running too is like, again, going to the Pacific Crest Trail, like that's more like, I'm thinking that's more like how a hiker, a through hiker has to like plan their food. And you did mention in that experience, you had a crew and support team actually like meet you. So it's not like you had to pack 9 days worth of food all on you. But could you share a little bit of what that fueling experience was like in that experience, or also just like other ultra marathons that you do, ultra running events?
Yeah. So this is also an interesting twist. I used to be so frustrated with my appetite because I always, once I was in recovery, I always had hunger cues. And I would get hunger cues when I was running. And being around a lot of people who don't eat running, as well as just trying to understand the whole concept behind fueling and running, I would always be like, shoot, how am I hungry again? Like, it's been a half an hour. This is ridiculous. And I would get really...
Yeah, so it's funny because like to me, I'm like, well, that's good that you were hungry and that's good that it's you're hungry while you're running. But going back to what you were just saying, like not fighting with your weight or not fighting with your sleep, like it's almost like you had to relearn how to not fight with your hunger cues.
Sure, yeah.
And just be like, wait, being hungry is normal. That's okay.
It's awesome. And now I consider it one of my superpowers because there are very... That. Few times that I can't eat during these efforts. And I witness like so many people struggle with fueling. So they're not getting their hunger cues. They get sick to their stomach. They don't want to eat. And I'm the exact opposite. I am excited. I'm like, oh, what do I get next? Like, here are all these amazing things that I can eat on the trail. And so I was able to kind of flip that switch of being frustrated by it to being like, this is what makes me a good 100 miler.
Oh yeah, because you can't you can't be a successful 100 mile runner without eating. And so to be grateful, oh, I'm hungry again.
Yes.
Thank you, hunger cues, for telling me that. I'm gonna listen to you now and fuel.
And I actually had to the therapist I was working with at a time reminded me, like, asked me how I would treat my dog if their stomach was growling and if I would like get mad at the dog, and I was like, never. And so I had to kind of think about, change my thought process, and that changed my ultra running. And that's not to say that I always have strong races, but, and sometimes my stomach does get upset, but for the most part, I'm really lucky in that I can fuel throughout these really long distances. So during, like, I can't eat gluten, but outside of that, I can eat anything that I want during these races.
Great.
Whatever I'm craving. So a big thing that my partner called them tummy pillows, but it would be like an egg cheese sandwich and I would eat them. And like, I'd put them in my pockets, or I had these like, and these are things that like, as a normal human, like day to day, I actually don't crave any of it. And it kind of now makes me want to throw up thinking about it, but
on your runs, you do.
I eat on my runs. Funny. But during, I still haven't been able to eat these, but during the PCT, I ate these like zebra cakes.
Like traditional zebra cakes or different?
Like this was
like Little Debbie.
Yeah. Like Little Debbie.
I love zebra cakes.
I can't talk about them anymore.
Because you overdid it on that.
It's fine. I can talk about it now. But I couldn't look at them for months. But I like would smash them in my pockets.
And oh, yeah.
It was like so hot some of the days. And like you get like, hey, welcome, road runners, soccer players. Like, this is the beauty of trail running. You get like sticky and you're eating these like zebra cakes. And then I didn't even realize that, like, as humans, we have neck rolls, like just little creases. And somehow I would get like zebra cake, like in my neck rolls. And I would be, it was so sticky. And I was like, this is literally the grossest thing ever. But you just kind of like learn to embrace it. Yeah. So I was eating.
Like, I love that zebra cakes fueled your run. I love hearing that, but totally understandable how after, you know, having multiple of them and this multi-day event and then having zebra cake stuck in our neck, we're just kind of like, okay, I need a break from these for a little bit. I understand.
Yeah. I think if I like had the opportunity to eat a zebra cake now, I probably could do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I would, anything that I wanted to eat or drink, I would.
Yeah.
Do that?
But like how, like, because you had to plan, you had to think of some things ahead of time, right? Or were you just like, bring the grocery store with you so I can figure it out? Or like, were there a few things that, and even your races now, like what are some of your like go-to items that you're like, I typically crave that?
Well, it's interesting because what I planned for, which I like a lot of vegetables, salads, like those are the things my body craves day to day. And so I just thought that that's what I would want. And we had kind of set up the kind of like a menu plan of how, of the food that we would have. And I didn't want any of it. And so thankfully there were like mini marts and like little grocery stores that we would send people out on. And now I kind of know what I gravitate towards in these races, which is like easily processed food.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point, I like switch from wanting sweet to savory. And I've kind of tracked enough that I kind of know what my body likes. And so I bring like these big containers of food. It's such an interesting sport. It's crazy as I'm talking about it, to just make sure that I have what I need at the race. And I mean, a lot of people have different philosophies on how to fuel. There are people who only fuel with, I'm trying to think of the correct terminology, of like healthy food, and that works for them. I have a mindset of like calories are calories, energy is energy. And when I'm out there running, whatever sounds good, as long as it's gluten-free, I'm going to eat it.
Yeah.
Hey fans, I hope you are enjoying this conversation so far, and we'll be back to it in just a moment. But first, I want to pause and let you know that this episode is brought to you by the Female Athlete System of Transformation, aka the Fast Track to overcome disordered eating and use food as fuel to perform at your highest level. The Female Athlete System of Transformation is my unique program and proven systems to guide female athletes to understanding and implementing the proper nutrition for their sport, life, and health. Myself and my team of registered sports dietitians work one-on-one with clients to address their unique needs and counsel them through the nutritional and behavioral changes needed. Many female athletes who resonate with disordered eating, mental guilt around food and body, relative energy deficiency in sport or female athlete triad, amenorrhea, repeat injuries due to negligent nutrition, or frankly, just a lack of knowledge and understanding on their fueling needs, have seen incredible success in the fast track. After years of working as a sports RD, I've compiled the most effective ways for female athletes to learn nutrition, be supported, be challenged, and ultimately find their success with fueling as fast as possible. So don't wait another day. Get to your goals faster by joining the Female Athlete System of Transformation. Look in the show notes or head to the website to book a free call and learn more. Okay, now let's get you back to the conversation. Enjoy.
Yeah. And it makes sense too, how you said earlier, like typically sometimes it's more of those processed foods that you crave because it's going to be like the easiest digested on your stomach. And like at that point, you just need energy. You really do. Like you said, in a normal day, you do crave vegetables, but running 100 miles isn't like a normal day. That's an event that you're doing. I mean, I know you run a lot of miles every day, but like that's still like the race is the event, that's not the norm. And so you can get your veggies in, you know, for dinner tonight. But like when you're doing this ultra trail run, like you can have the processed food, whatever that is, that's just easy on your stomach and gets the calories in.
Yeah.
Because that's a priority.
Yeah. And it's something it works for me and I'm grateful for that. I can't predict the future. I have had a really healthy string of seasons put together. I mean, I lovingly say that as ultra runners, we will all deal with injury because we're asking a lot of our bodies, but I have yet to struggle with any really serious injuries. And I do equate it to having a really good experience with fueling. And something I do and I really strongly abide by is I've started within a half an hour of finishing my runs. I eat something like to make sure I try to follow like a protein, carb, fat, it doesn't have to be specific, but it's like something that I try to be mindful of because I'm coming from a mindset of deprivation where like when I used to run, I would see how long I could go without eating. And so now it's like, nope, it doesn't matter if on the occasion, if I am not hungry, to me, it's not a choice. Like if I want to be an ultra runner, then I have to eat.
It's part of the job.
It's the training. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's part of your training. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great way to think of it. Yeah.
So that's a rule that I have for myself and my athletes. When they ask me, they're like, well, what do you do if you're not hungry? I'm like, I mean, there are days I don't want to run and I run. So same thing for food. There are days that you might not want to eat within that half an hour, but you if you want to do the training, then that's a part of the process.
It's great advice. I agree with it completely. And I think that mindset too of like viewing it as your training is a really helpful way to think of it, you know? So all of your Danielle between the fact that like you did go to school, you are a licensed clinical social worker, but then also just like your personal experiences and passion in the running community. And as we've talked today, stories of like you personally overcoming challenges in your life and in your running life has led you to, you know, help others do the same. And so you and your sister together, correct, have Inner Drive Wellness.
Yes.
Your company. And you provide a lot of different services there, running coaching, the mental coaching. And I think really just like this holistic approach, you know, with nutrition and fueling and meditations and mindsets. There's a lot that goes in there. So could you just tell us a little bit about Inner Drive Wellness? And also on your website, you talk about your four core principles there. So can you tell us about Inner Drive Wellness?
Yeah, I was a social worker and I worked in pretty intense crisis situations and mental health. And I feel really grateful for those experiences to help me understand the difference between wellness and mental health and how to live essentially a grounded life that is able to be resilient and adaptive during challenges. Because that's, you know, one of the things I see for a lot of us is not knowing how to manage when things are being thrown our way, when we have certain plans.
Yep.
So I was, as you were saying in the beginning, I was seeing the, you know, there's like all these correlations between athletics and running and life. And I was like, wow, like what I'm passionate about, while I enjoy working in psychiatric services and how it helped me build these skills, what I really want to be doing is helping people who are wanting to elevate and create a different relationship with themselves and life.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I saw that was really common, especially with these high achieving athletes, is that they fly under the radar because they're what, I mean, what we want to like emulate. So getting good grades, very successful, very scheduled, very regimented. And when it, we unpack that, that's because of underlying anxiety or perfectionism and not maybe being, at least I can say personally, and for a lot of the athletes I work with, not being able to be as flexible in certain situations as they maybe want to be. And then that emerging as negative self-talk. So I created this program based on my own experiences, my own training, to help athletes be able to overcome not just when things are difficult in their life, but also the narrative or the story that they've told themselves for so long, and how mm-hmm. to hold themselves accountable when they're struggling or have a bad race or a bad workout, but also learn how to move forward without letting it derail.
Yeah, absolutely. So how in working, what does that look like in working with you? You know, like is, like you mentioned, like you created the program. So what does that kind of look like?
Yeah, I use the term program because it feels official. And then people ask me questions like that. And I'm like, I don't really know. But what the program looks like is essentially I have people look at 8 different categories of their life and tell me how they want to view themselves, their struggles, where they're at right now with these different 8 categories, and also what they're doing well. And so we go through the different categories and we see what's the most urgent and pressing, and we start to unpack it and see more or less the pitfalls and where things are not running smoothly.
So your program is working with you one-on-one as, yes. as their coach, and you have, this is your system as to how you're going to coach them through
yes.
it.
Yes. That yes. was a very nice way to say it. Thank you.
Well, I just wanted to make sure because I say the same thing too. I have a program, but it's still an individualized thing. The program yes. is our process. It has a name. We have a process and it works. So therefore I call it a program,
yeah, exactly.
But it's individualized because it's one-on-one and there's coaching involved.
Yeah.
So yeah, yeah, yeah. I totally get where you're coming from.
Yeah. And what I often find is that there's a lot of interweave patterns of behavior, and the challenges that athletes, and my definition of athlete is anyone who is passionate about what they're doing. And I think that's yeah. a really important part, is you don't have to be an all-star or a professional to be an athlete. If you mm-hmm. walk a mile a day and you're super passionate about it, like there's your athletic ability.
Yeah.
But anyone who identifies as an athlete who is struggling with certain areas of their life, generally those pitfalls or struggles are also showing up in other areas,
mm-hmm.
which is great because we get a lot of practice. So, you know, we identify the challenges, and then there's, like we were also talking about in the beginning of this podcast, mm-hmm. there's work. You have to practice it all the time. And eventually the practice gets easier sometimes, but you get better at managing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. It's an incredible resource that you're providing. And I think too, you know, as somebody who also followed their passion, you know, right, as a dietitian, it's like, oh, I worked for a hospital, I worked for a team, yeah. and it's like, you know what, I'm going to follow my passion and do this my way to help people. So I love that you're doing that as well. And so people will include in our show notes know, how to get in touch with you if they're interested in Inner Drive Wellness. You've got a website, you're on social media.
Yes.
And so they can get in touch with you if they're interested. And Danielle, I end every podcast episode with some fun questions for awesome. All of our guests. Are you ready for them?
Bring it on.
If you could eat one food every single day for the rest of your life, but never get sick of it, what would it be?
Definitely peanut butter.
That's a common answer.
Really?
Definitely. Well, it's a fan favorite. People love peanut butter.
I always want to be unique. I should have known peanut butter was a favorite. No, I do always want to be unique, but I assume everyone loves peanut. Though some people don't, and I'm always like very conflicted by it, but yeah, peanut butter is great.
So I'll just share quickly. I'm one of those people who like didn't grow up loving peanut butter, and it wasn't until, and when I went to college, everybody was like obsessed with peanut butter and I didn't get it. And like I had a college roommate who like kept this massive size jar of peanut butter like in her desk drawer, and I didn't get it.
Yeah,
but like over the years I get it now. Like I don't know why it just wasn't a big deal in my family growing up, but like college was the first time I was like, what are there all these peanut butter lovers? I don't get it. And like I get it now. I've grown,
I mean,
to love it.
It's okay too if you don't love it. Like
I would say I like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the cool thing is like there's a lot of other really good food too.
But there's a lot of peanut butter lovers. Like that's like a thing. So amazing. What could be an obvious answer, but you never know. What's your favorite sport to participate in?
Yeah, running.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But I don't know. Talk to me in like 15 years and I might say canoeing.
Right. It might be canoeing. I love that.
Yeah, you know.
And how about as a spectator? Is it still running or is there a different sport that you love to be a fan of and maybe a cheerleader of?
I do actually really love watching running, but I love watching all sports. And mm-hmm. I generally, this is probably cliche, but I love the underdog. Big fan. Yeah. I'm always rooting for them.
That's great.
And sometimes good. I change in the middle of the sports. Like if the underdog changes and someone is like winning by a lot, then I have to change. And I'm like, oh, I'm different underdog.
It's too funny. And then final question. It's a hard one, but if there's a female athlete out there that you want to give a shout out to for just being a role model and an inspiration to others, she can be somebody well-known or just somebody in your personal life. Who would that be and why?
Oh, that's a good question. There are so many female athletes that I look up to. I'm having a hard time narrowing it down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's why it's a hard one.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, they're like just... I think there are quite a few athletes that I actually coach that are just quiet grinders
mm-hmm.
and they just keep showing up and believing in themselves. And it would have to go to them and I'm going to leave them anonymous.
That's fine. Yeah.
But it's definitely, I'm a big fan of the ones who maybe don't get the highlights
mm-hmm.
that just keep like finding their passions.
So shout out to all of your athletes and clients that you coach.
Yeah.
Love it. Amazing, Danielle. Well, thank you so much for sharing with our listeners more about you, about the ultra running community, fueling your journey with food, body, running, mindset, mental health, and all that you do for your athletes and clients. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me come on and listening to me ramble.
It was very helpful. I really hope you enjoyed that episode and thanks for listening. But before I let you go, I have free resources that you can have access to right away, right now, so that you can start fueling your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. First, I have your Red S recovery race. If you've ever wondered if you might be struggling with Red S, curious to learn more, or know you have Red S and are looking to recover fast, then you can head to www.riseupnutritionrun.com/Red S and download the Red S Recovery Race. See how you place and figure out the next steps to recovery. Plus, while there, I have a few other great resources for you, including 3 nutrition secrets that every elite athlete swears by, and access to our private Facebook community, Female Athlete Nutrition. So again, to gain access to all of this, head to riseupnutritionrun.com/reds. That's /REDS.
and you can gain access and get the help you need fast. Too many girls and women and female athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. Become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and I'll see you next time.